Visors, you'll all stand. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the building. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Byers, and Setzer. Lytle will be absent the whole meeting. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which is the general agenda. Approved minutes of meeting held March 23rd. Approved claims through April 6th, the amount of $318,845.32. Approved and placed on file, correspondence received.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Comments from the public, requests for future agenda items. Approve or disapprove moving forward with courthouse lawn, including removing sidewalks, grading, installation of new sidewalk sprinkler system, and exterior electrical conduit.
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion.
Good morning. Dave Jones, custodian. During our last building and grounds meeting, we did discuss moving forward with the courthouse lawn at this time, which involves removing existing sidewalks in certain areas and putting in new sidewalks, doing a considerable amount of grading on the south side where the dirt has humped up. When the new window sills were put in, it is recommended that we keep the dirt about 6 inches lower than the window sills. And the sprinkler system would be going in and possibly installing new electrical conduit for future lights around the yard at this time also. We also talked about possibly removing this yellow storage shed on the north side. And the Building and Grounds Committee did invite Chris Watolski, County Surveyor, to come and answer any questions.
Okay. Chris, you want to give a little background on what you've did on drainage and so forth?
Basically, we just...
And your recommendation of moving the sidewalk. That was a good one.
So. All right, yeah, we did... on the drawing, you can see that we're going to try to do on 6th Street and Lincoln Street an offset sidewalk, so it'll get it away from the traffic a little bit better. And we did an updated plan on this, and we did a little bit of grading work on the south side, so hopefully we can get that water away from the building. And on this drawing, it doesn't reflect it yet, but we're also going to try to put downspout pipes away from the building to get the drainage so it doesn't set up against there when it rains. And I think the other thing is, too, on the driveway out to Lincoln Street, we tried to relocate that so it lines up with the parking lot on the north side.
Well, you've done a good job on this, Chris. I mean, a lot of this is Chris's design. Moving the sidewalk off 77, I think, is an excellent idea. And even the crosswalk, moving it to where it's in line with the sheriff's office. We are looking at doing this with our own forces as much as we can. Do you have any figures yet, Davey?
I do not yet, no.
And Marlon, I saw your people out there looking this morning, so I'm assuming they're getting ready to start popping sidewalk.
Okay, we turned in a locator already because there's utilities.
Okay.
I think we'd be very pleased, Chris. You certainly have been helpful, never hesitated a minute, and thank you very much. You should be, we should be very pleased the way you've done your job. Thank you.
Any other questions? Vote.
I'm sorry. I think this probably is a good idea. It was just put before us that weren't on building and grounds just right now. And I think until there's a cost associated with it, I'm going to have to vote no on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Matt.
One of the discussions we had is at some point we're in the stages of needing to plant stuff and needed to grade some work. So as far as moving forward, that was part of the discussion, too, is to try and find out what this cost is going to be, because we couldn't ask these gentlemen to proceed forward without the knowledge of the board. So we wanted to have that discussion with everyone here. So part of moving forward is getting those cost estimates with the intention of what's it going to cost? Who are we going to get to do the work? There's, you know, we need to do some demolition initially, but there's some fine grading work that we probably don't have the ability to do. We'll hire someone to come do that. You know, getting some sort of grass down there, but some of those, so that we could proceed, I felt that it was important that we have a board decision to say, okay, we're going to proceed with this, but at baby steps. I think
okay,
go for
so
it. This is what the costs will be coming in. And
so what we're voting for is not actually doing the work, but to proceed gathering information
yeah,
and
not,
costs.
Not one big stroke of the pen saying
we
go
won't
and
do the
it.
Work it's, on our own forces. I'm removing sidewalk, the grader work, that stuff will start. Because those are our own people.
We do that in-house.
But if we remove the sidewalk, we have to replace
at some point,
sidewalk.
Yes.
But there was a need to at least give these gentlemen some, where are we going with this? We've talked about it for a couple meetings now, and we're kind of at the point of what do we do? So we thought we need to have that discussion in open session that we really need to proceed with this because we're getting to the point that if we don't see now, we're going to, is it April, May, boy, you get into June, it's getting pretty warm then. There's this potential sprinkler system, but I would agree with you. The costs are still going to come in, and there may be a point where we just say, okay, we've got to stop from here. We talked about trying to prioritize demolition, grading, seeding, sidewalk. I think that information will be forthcoming, but we just needed to at some point give them some direction of what are we going to do. But the costs are still, we would still go out there and look at this. These are the three or four different bids we have are estimates for seed. These are the three or four estimates we have for grading. That was kind of the intent, was to give at least somebody a green light. We got to start working on something, or we're going to be living in a mud pit all summer. But I appreciate where you're coming from. But, yeah, this isn't a stroke of the pen to say just go do it. Those costs still need to come before the board, and those decisions still need to be made. That was the intent.
And I guess I feel comfortable on like some minor grading and seeding, but as far as pulling sidewalks out without knowing what the cost is, because you know, you get into concrete work, then that can be major dollar expenditures. I guess I don't feel comfortable just saying go ahead without knowing exactly what we're saying go ahead.
Well, Davey has
the
estimates.
The committee had some estimates at
yeah.
$3 a square foot. I think we had two or three estimates on what that concrete was going to cost. I think we discussed that at past meetings, Kathy.
Okay.
So we have an idea of what the replacing that sidewalk is going to be. We've had a couple of bids.
$8,000 to $13,000, correct?
Yeah,
is that what it was?
Close to $13,000 for the sidewalks.
And there's dollars in there. I was just running through that quickly this morning, but we had talked about there's in the general fund, there's miscellaneous fundings that are there, and there's also the building and grounds budget. There's some dollars that are there to be used for that. So the dollars will be coming from a couple of different places. And then there'll be some of this that'll spill over into the next budget year as we plan for it. But I agree with you. That was kind of the discussion. This is all well and good, but what's it going to cost? Well, we need to get some of those coming in. This was just kind of a green light to start proceeding with that. I appreciate where you're coming from, yeah, because we don't, you know, we need to know what some of those are. But to move some of those sidewalks, I just think that makes good sense to do. So there was also discussion about, it says conduit on here. As we're doing the grading, there was a recommendation that we probably should look at stringing that electrical conduit at that time. Otherwise, we'll come back and try to do it later. You know, putting I think there was one sidewalk we may have to put a sleeve underneath so that we can get underneath that without chewing up the
right.
new concrete. So,
and we do have on the south side where there would be a large enough amount of dirt coming off the top that we might possibly have to bury. There is a conduit that's feeding the floodlights that might have to actually go deeper after all that dirt is scraped off the top also.
It's unfortunate that this three-minute meeting doesn't really reflect the hour and 20 minutes we sat up there and we beat this thing around and around. And so I guess I can appreciate the fact that, and so if you feel like being very verbose, I would do that, because we talked about a lot of different things and different scenarios. So by no means was it a quick discussion. There was a lot of time that we spent on that. But I agree with you, Kathy. I mean, that, you know, and there may come a point where, oh, that's too expensive, we're going to have to stop. But I think the necessity was we got to get the water away from the building, and that includes grading and some type of ground cover at some point. And as we're doing the grading, that seemed to be the logical time to, if we're going to move the sidewalks, that was the time to do that as well. So just some background. But, again, yeah, we beat this thing around for
hour or a good
hour and a half. So sometimes, yeah, these the agenda item doesn't necessarily do justice to the time that we spent looking at it.
Oh,
I appreciate
and
that.
And I certainly it's hard understand to cram that. All, that so.
But concerns, I would echo the concerns, but at some point we just gotta move forward. So,
okay. Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0 to proceed. Okay, in favor, Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Byers, against Setzer. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Marlon, we might wait because the public hearing and all that's at 9:30 on yours. So we got some time to... Dave Merrill and C.J. Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. I'm C.J. Johnson. I'm the regional administrator with Region 5 Systems. Dave and I always travel together just to give commissioners and county supervisors an idea of the difference between the two organizations that you provide funding to. Region 5 Systems is responsible for the behavioral health provision in southeast Nebraska. We primarily contract with Blue Valley Behavioral Health in the rural counties. We actually contract with 13 agencies, and then we have voucher programs that involve a number of other agencies throughout the region. If you go to page 7 in the report, I'm just going to kind of walk you through a few key elements that we do. With those providers, if you look back a number of years ago, we had significant issues with providers and their compliance in relation to paperwork, bringing in reports, and those kind of things. Over the years, we've worked with them, and we do annual audits, and you'll see that on a regular basis now, they comply 95 to 100% of the time, all those agencies. So what you can be assured is they are providing the services they say they are, and they're doing it with high quality, because we also do quality audits. If you go to page 9, Region 5 is also responsible for coordinating the emergency protective custody system, the emergency system. After 2004, when behavioral health reform was passed, LB 1083, one of our goals was to reduce the emergency protective custody holds in the region. We've done that by about 25%, and I will tell you, most of that reduction actually has occurred in the rural counties. One of the ways we did that was we set up a crisis response team process for your law enforcement, because what was happening prior to that is they would encounter somebody that was having an acute mental health crisis, and even though they didn't feel that that person needed to be placed in emergency protective custody hold, they felt like they had no other option, so they would go ahead and EPC that person and haul them up to Lincoln. Now they simply call an 800 number. We send out a therapist and many times an emergency community support worker right to the spot where that law enforcement officer is and come up with an alternative plan for that person. So we've seen a significant reduction, especially in the rural areas, which obviously saves the county money. Another piece that we've done is we've significantly decreased our repeat emergency custody holds. One of the cries back in 2004 was we were going to just dump people out on the streets and not give them the services they need. One of the things that I want to assure you is nationally the repeat recidivism rate into state hospitals is over 20%. In Region 5, it's at 5%, which means we really are doing a good job of connecting people with services and keeping them out of the hospitals at the best we can. If you go to page 11, I just want to again remind you we have a rental assistance program that's set up for individuals with mental health and substance abuse issues. even though it primarily focuses on housing issues with them, I encourage rural counties, whenever you have somebody applying for general assistance, to first have them call John Turner at our office. He's very knowledgeable of a lot of resources in the region, and a lot of times, even though he may not specifically be able to help them with direct dollars or vouchers for housing, he many times can hook them up with other resources that doesn't require then general assistance funds. Page 17, just quickly, we do have, we are responsible for prevention. We have coalitions in all 16 counties in the region. They primarily focus on activities related to youth to try and prevent alcohol and drug abuse. One of those other aspects is we have a youth action board. Many of the counties have representatives on there. Those youth have a budget that's available to them so they can put on annual events. Some of their bigger events are the Red White Tailgate Party every spring. They have a youth leadership day at Peru State College where youth can learn leadership skills, and they also do their annual June Jam at Milford where they have over 200 youth attend that are taking a drug-free pledge. On page 22, you all remember the safe haven issue, and I was just reminded of that again yesterday. I understand there was a 12-year-old dropped off at an emergency room up in Omaha two days ago. But some of what we recognize was when families go to county attorneys and say, we think we need to make our child a state ward, county attorneys didn't have any options. They didn't know what to do with that. So we've actually set up a program where those county attorneys can refer the family to. It's to the Youth Assessment Center in Lincoln. And then we provide a therapist that does a complete assessment with those families, helps them try and figure out what resources they need. Along with that, if the therapist feels that they're going to need additional support, we hook them up with our prevention professional partners who will work with that family over a number of months to help them hook up with the resources. We've had over 140 families go through that program, all of them thinking that their child needed to be made a state ward. And out of that 140, only six actually had to go on and make their child a state ward. So we feel that's been a very successful program. And finally, let's talk about the county match. Legislatively, it is required that counties match the general fund for behavioral health. There is no rate increase in the legislature this year, so we won't be asking for any rate increase to match that. We do have the 2010 census that have come through, though, and Gage County did experience a slight decrease in your overall population, and what that translates into is a slight decrease also in the contribution. For mental health, that'd be $32,427, and for substance abuse, $5,833. So with that, I can answer any questions before Dave comes up.
That figure again,
$32,427, and then for substance abuse,
$5,833. Yeah,
$5,833. Thank you, CJ, for making a very complicated, detailed information system brief. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. No questions.
Thank you.
The other advantage of CJ and I traveling together is it saves mileage. We split that. And I've always liked that about our governing board. By using the same commissioners and supervisors the same day, it cuts the administrative cost in half from what would be happening if we had totally unique things. And so I've always appreciated that about Region 5. I'm with Region 5 Services. We provide direct supports to people who experience developmental disabilities. And we just wanted you to know that we've had a good year in terms of the legislature had appropriated some money for the waiting list. And of the people who are choosing new services, I believe we added somewhere around 100 people across the region. So our actual numbers of the number of people we supported January 1 was around 935 people across southeast Nebraska. and the number of staff is about that as well. And this is primarily federal money through the Medicaid waiver program. And so it's a win-win for the state of Nebraska because more people get served, we bring more federal money into our economy, and it actually provides new jobs proportionately in the rural and urban areas. At our Monday governing board meeting, we will then be addressing the new census to formally adopt that, which should mean that for the last 15 years, I've been telling you there's no rate increase for developmental disabilities for Gage County, and this year we'll be able to say that it's going down a little bit because the rate stays the same and a few slightly smaller population. I want to turn it over to Joanne Marsha, unless you have any questions for me, because really this is the heart of the program and where it is. So.
No questions.
I'd like to introduce them.
I will. But I also want to tell you, your daughter's been really working hard at some issues lately, and I just wanted you to know that I noticed. Yes. Yeah. Joanne Nolting is the area director. She's been with Region 5 for 35 years, and Marsha is going to, they're going to give the local report. So.
Yes. Ms. Marsh Baker. Okay, we'll step up here. Good morning. We would like to share with you a little bit about our local support here in Beatrice. I am passing around the information pertaining to the provisions we have. We continue to provide four basic services, which is job placement, day services, residential, medical, and transportation. Within our day services supports, we have a business site located out in Industrial Park. We currently serve 15 people in our day service supports. I have outlined what some of the habilitation training skills are at those sites for you to review. And once I go through my report, Marsha's going to tell you how this applies to her individually. She's given us consent to talk about her supports. Residentially, we're serving 22 people. We currently have four residential settings in Beatrice that serve 3 to 4 people. Total right now, we have 11 people in 24-hour supports. We provide non-overnight supports to 4 adults. 3 individuals reside in their natural family home, and 1 individual resides in her own apartment. We have 5 extended family home settings where 7 individuals are currently being supported. Some of the habilitation training that we provide is listed below as far as independent living skills that we teach. Medical supports are being provided to 19 people in our local community, as well as transportation supports. I've also listed some of the business affiliations we have with our agency, so you're aware of how we are involved, interconnected with our local economy as well. Some of the highlights that I wanted to share with you is presently we are employing 32 employees out of the Gage County area. We also had, interestingly enough, a gentleman participate in the Walk for Chocolate event, and he sponsored here in Beatrice, and he won a $50 gift card, which he was quite happy with, from local merchants. Today, we have transitioned 4 people from BSDC into our services, and we have been asked to provide supports to a gentleman and a lady that are currently residing at BSDC, and we're in the process of working on supports for those individuals. We have 5 adults and 2 children in the Gage County area that are being served in extended family home settings. We have had an LPN working with us in this local area 20 hours a week, providing medical supports as needed to our staff who are medication state aides. They are certified by the state to administer medications. We have last fall, 4 people were employed by the Salvation Army on a seasonal basis during the holidays. And we presently have 9 people working in different sites in the community, including Head Start, the Humane Society, 429 Factory, and the Salvation Army. Now, there's the detail of what we do in here for your review at your convenience, but I'd like to share with you how some of these supports relate to Marsha's life, and Marsha's going to share that with us. Marsha, as far as day service supports in community work, can you share with them where you work?
I'm a volunteer at Start. I take care of kids, and I also I'm a very diabetic. I had this disease since I was about 13 years old, and I was growing up here in Beatrice. And I like to work very hard at the Region 5 services, and I do a lot of good quality jobs here around the community.
And you work at Head Start with the children, but you also work at the 429.
And I also, and also I volunteer at the Salvation Army.
At the Salvation Army, that's right. So she's very involved in her community work sites. And then residentially, she lives in a 24-hour support setting. And since Marcia came into our program, being a severe diabetic, as she experienced, she has had a thalidation program, which helps her take her blood sugar readings.
Right.
She does that every day, five times a day,
right? That's right.
And then when you take your blood sugar readings, what do you do with the information?
What I do with my information, I give them my MSA and my...
Right. But you write it down in your program book?
I write it down in my program book and everything else, and I take action.
Yes, and what that is you plan your diet according to what those blood sugar readings are, as well as your insulin shots, which you can self-administer, right?
That's right.
So it's a very intense program. Marcia has done very well prior to coming into our services. She had a lot of ambulance needs, and she has not had any in a number of years. So we've really come a long way. Marcia's done a great job. And so that's what we have to share. Any questions this morning? Okay, thank you so much for your
time. Thank you very much. Thank you, Marcia.
You're welcome, Dennis Biles.
Okay, Stacy Gross, report on GEOCOM, 9:30 timed event. Is Stacy here? Not here yet, huh? That looks like you go to the back of the pack. there's a couple
Next
of them.
One.
Approve or disapprove resolution on hazard mitigation plan.
Make a motion to approve resolution on the hazard mitigation plan.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote.
Mark was going to do a presentation on exact.
I thought he was just doing his emergency management update.
I can do that during about the resolution.
I just was approving it so we could have a discussion on it.
Okay.
That's why I wanted to do that.
I'm hurrying it, huh? Okay, Mark, go ahead.
Okay, the hazardous mitigation plan is the hazard. We've been working on that for almost 3 years. It's finally done. It's Olson Associates, along with the lower Big Blue NRD and our local NRD, has been working together with 9 emergency managers in our area here. The final plan was approved by FEMA, so December, it'll be good for 5 years. This resolution is just that we're willing to participate in the plan. It's not a commitment that we have to participate, and as far as the projects are planning projects are concerned, but it's more of a just we will acknowledge the plan that we have the plan. We have to have the plan if we're doing any type of mitigation work, and we have to have the plan if we expect anything back from FEMA during a disaster time. The plan is, I'd like to offer you a copy of the plan, but it's 1,601 pages long. But there is a certain section in there just for Gage County that I can print for you if you request it. Just give me a holler or stop by or email, and I can even email that section to you. So. But basically, again, the plan, the resolution is just that we do accept the plan in its entirety, and that we are willing to work with the other entities. Particularly for in the plan itself, we have some projects. If we do not get to the projects in the 5 year, we can continue those projects. We'll start working on the new projects in about 2 to 3 years, that we can add some more projects to the ones that we currently do not have. So most of the ones that we're seeing at a county level, and we're working with the townships on this, is that mostly drainage problems to keep the roads from flooding and washing away after heavy rains and such. So, anyway, if you have any questions on the plan or like to see that section, or you'd like a whole copy of the 1,601 pages, I can give you a CD of it too. So,
Resolution 11-16. Any more discussion? Vote 6-0 to approve. your update, Mark?
I can do that. Okay, the wait, can I wait till you get to Hannah? Is this some of the highlights of some of my update of my report in my office here? Again, was the hazardous mitigation plan. We've met with the townships and the villages and such, so I've been busy doing getting resolutions. I've only got one village that didn't come to the meeting, so we need to meet with them. That's Claytonia. And anyway, we're starting the project planning and look at some of the communities have already started some of their planning projects too. And we've met with some people that are willing to help us with some of that planning. So we'll bring that back to the board when we get ready to do some of them projects on the county and the township level. We had Severe Weather Awareness Week. This year, 83 people attended storm spotter training at the homestead, which was quite a few number more than normal. Participation from businesses and schools during the drill on Wednesday of that week were quite more than usual also. Had a lot of phone calls with questions and telling me that they did participate. All the warning sirens worked that day, as they did the last Tuesday morning also. I participated with Blue Springs Elementary during the drill. Found a few things that we needed to change there, so we corrected them right away. And we did a program on KWBE and information in the Daily Sun and the Arbor State. We participated in a statewide poster contest where we had participation from five local schools. Out of the 100 posters that went to the state to be judged, all but one year that I've been here have a winner. This year I just had an honorable mention, so we're going to have to work on our art class down there a little bit more. But so I did. Shelby Decker from Blue Springs Elementary received an honorable mention. Out of the 100 posters, she was in the top 10, so that's pretty good. Narrow banding project, I've been talking about that at a lot of the meetings. We have purchased 20 portable radios and 5 mobile radios to upgrade the sheriff's radios. 7 portable units for my office. One of those was paid for by Operation Roundup through Norris Public Power Grant, which saved us $645. We've had the new repeater on the South Water Tower that's up and running now for part of that narrow band project. And we're working with the city on a request for proposal for a contract or vendor to come in. And we think we can get a better deal if we lump it all together with all the radios that we have in the county that we're going to have to reprogram. So we're working on that proposal with the city police department on that communications. Received another AED grant, automatic external defibrillator grant from public health to place a defibrillator in the Christ Lutheran Church at Pickerel. We had a FEMA risk map meeting, a new program that FEMA's come out with that we're required to participate in. You can go through some of that information there. Basically, it's about collecting information on floodplain mapping. They're currently doing a project here, a pilot project in Gage County on a section of the river on the Big Blue River down by Barnston, 1 mile from Highway 8 north. That's one of the pilot programs that they're working on right now that they're trying to finish up. We'll get that report back here soon, I hope. So the FEMA risk map meeting was held in Wymore. Tier 2 reports are required under SARA Title III. We have to receive those reports every year. Any facility in the county that has a reportable quantity that's reportable, depending on what it is, our biggest thing here in the county, of course, is anhydrous ammonia. So we have a lot of facilities. Compared to Jefferson and Saline, I think Jefferson has 17 facilities, Saline has 20 facilities. We have 42 facilities that we have to visit. So we try to visit those at least once a year and go through the tier 2 reports. Reverse 911, I attached a brochure, a copy of the brochure on the back here of my report. Emergency notification system, cell phone registry, basically is a reverse 911 system that we've purchased and implemented several months ago. The next step we can do now is that we've determined that there's a lot of people, of course, that have gotten rid of their landline telephones and went just strictly to cell phones. The current system we have will only dial out to landline telephones. So now we're going to, part of the project and part of the package deal we purchased was that Geocom will enter these cell phone numbers if we have a registry. So In case you do not have a landline phone, all you have is a cell phone at your home, we have to do a reverse 911 for such thing as evacuation or a notification of a criminal activity or a missing person, that type of thing. We can do that, and it'll go to your cell phone. So we're going to kick that off this next couple weeks. The brochures are being printed. We're going to send them out in the Board of Public Works bills, so that'll take care of 7,000 there. And Norris Public Power is working with me to get it in their little magazine they send out. So anybody just fills it out, rips it out, and mails it in to us, and we'll get those registered. So if you have that situation or you want to register your cell phone, you can fill this brochure that I attached here out and get it back to me, and I'll take it to the 911 center. So that's a pretty neat system. We've utilized it once. The sheriff utilized it on a criminal matter that we had a person that escaped. So works very good. And what it does is sends out a canned message that you type in. So it's a voice. It's a computer-generated voice. So you know. Training, we've had 333 Mutual Aid Training Day was at Saturday, February 26th. It was in Diller. 73 were in attendance. That was a very good, it was our first planned event for several years that we've done, and it was very good attendance. Dealing with the media, we have a course coming up, a short course of FEMA Homeland Security on rural responders, how to deal with news media. That's April 19th at the Extension Office, and that training is being offered free through Homeland Security also. It'll be taught by Iowa State University. Other activities on there, basically just some things that we've been doing. And the new windows are in the EOC. They're kind of nice, they're really quiet, and the blinds don't make a lot of noise blowing in the wind no more, so that's nice too. And then every year for the past 5 years, we've had the Health and Safety Fair Emergency Management and Wymore Fire Rescue sponsors that with Park Lodge in Wymore, and that's coming up on the 15th. That Friday morning from 9 to 11. So basically that's the gist of my report for today.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Any questions? Need a motion to put the report on file. Moved by Bauman.
Stacy's here too now, by the way.
He's out of luck.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Gus, you have 4 minutes. Can you do what you need in 4 minutes?
Absolutely. Morning. Staying with my promises, when I took office, any new deputies I get, I try to bring in front of the board so they can see the face and know who we got hired. I lost Deputy Klimek to an outside agency out of state in law enforcement, so I was fortunate enough to get a replacement. Today I want to introduce John Patch. He's an 11-year veteran, I believe it is. Most of his career was in a Crete Police Department. He took a year off, went over to the Middle East to get a tan, and trained the civilian law enforcement over there. He came back and went back to Crete Police Department part-time and also with the Saline County Sheriff's Office part-time. He's been with us about 2 weeks now, I think, in that area. John, we had quite a few applicants. John stood out there for us in several areas. One, he's a veteran officer. He's familiar to the area. He's had, obviously, numerous hours of training. Some of the highlights on his, he's a certified clandestine lab technician, which is handy to have with our drug issues. He's had basic and extensive SWAT training, which will fit right in with our SWAT team that we do have. He's also a certified bike patrol officer, I do believe, and he's attended and completed the supervision course at our academy in Grand Island. So currently, I think he's still driving back and forth from Crete, I believe, and we're still working on getting a place for him over here, but we're working on that. But otherwise, have any questions, feel free to ask. You might meet him someday. So you want to suck up now when you can.
Thank you, John. We appreciate it. It'll be challenging. So.
Anything I heard else? Matt say he loved your beard. So.
Anything you want to say? All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is my official clock, and it doesn't say 9:30 yet. So, what do we have that we can do in about a minute? Kayla, yeah, let's do the resolution to approve or disapprove resolution to transfer $100,000 from the general fund to the emergency bridge fund for the operation of the fund.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion.
Just a moment. Let me see.
1117.
So this was, as we try to build these funds up, let's see. I don't know if I've got the most current
that
fund balance.
That was just scheduled when we did the budget, that we would put that money into that fund, and the only way to get it in there is to transfer it from the
general. Right, I just was trying to give a balance. We're trying to build up basically the, which one's this? This is the
emergency bridge.
This is the emergency bridge and the road and bridge sinking funds, and these are, basically I look at them as savings accounts to draw from when we need to. So periodically throughout the year we transfer some dollars in there and try to get those up. So that's basically what we're doing, just transferring them from the general in there so build those savings accounts.
The standard cost of doing business.
This one would be only once a year we would do these funds here, but yeah.
And that we were, well, that's fine. I don't have the
okay. Any other questions? Vote 6-0 to approve. Need a motion to. We're going to go into. We're going to need a motion to open the public hearing for the. Regarding the vacating of the road described in portions of South 134th Road, Section 20, Adams Township.
I'll make the motion.
Second. Moved by Dorn, seconded by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to open it up. Is there a sign-up sheet available, Marla?
Yeah, it's going around, and there's two separate ones, so they're trying to get everybody signed.
Okay, who is first up, then, to... You want to give background to this, Marlon?
Yeah, I can a little bit. Basically, it's been brought up by an issue by the E-Energy Adams, and they want to put some more siding in there for getting in longer trains, unit trains. So, and it's two separate issues because the railroad crossing is one issue. The state has to have a resolution on it. And so that's why we set up two hearings and basically closing the same road, but it's two hearings. So.
Okay. And when the sign-up sheet's available, let me know, and we can support or opposition from the public regarding the vacating of the road.
First of all, the ethanol people have signed up first, and I think they want to speak, so I'm closing.
Name and address for the record and step forward then.
Good morning. I'm Carl Sitzman. I've been the Chief Executive Officer of E-Energy Adams for the last 4 years. My home address is 7030 Straffen Place in Lincoln. I would also like to take this opportunity to recognize the other supporters from E-Energy Adams that are present here this morning. John Cosby, our CFO, Andrew Johansson, our Commodities Manager, and representing our board of directors, we have Dennis Bosiger and Ron Miller. I also wanted to say that I signed up to speak for both of these, but I'm only going to speak once. They're really one issue, so my comments will apply both times. I'd like to begin this morning by explaining the project we are undertaking and the reason for the road closure. We have been working with BNSF Railroad for the past 2 years trying to gain unit train capability for the ethanol that we ship out. We currently ship out on average approximately 20 rail cars twice a week. With unit train capability, we would ship out 96 cars at one time. In order to gain this capability, we need to extend our track in both directions, both to the north and to the south. On the north end, we are purchasing additional land in the neighbor's field to accommodate the railroad track extension. On the south end, it's a bit more complicated, but because it involves this railroad crossing and a road closure, the topics of the hearing today. I have an aerial photo of the south end, which shows the affected areas. Basically, this yellow part is the road closure we're talking about. This is the crossing of the railroad tracks here. This is the railroad crossing, and then this is the road closure. We plan on putting these tracks. They will come down along here, and we'll cross two tracks. We'll cross this 134th Road, hopefully everybody can see, and run back into this area here. And because we will be adding two more tracks, we will have, including the mainline BNSF track, we'll have three pretty much in succession there. That's the issue from a safety standpoint.
How far south are you going past the roadway?
We are going all the way back well into this blue area here, probably about where my finger's at. Okay. So when the project's complete, there will actually be three tracks, and we looked at adding railroad crossing equipment, but it's cost prohibitive, and not adding it presents a safety concern there with the three tracks that I talked about. I think we're finished with the drawing, but I just wanted everybody to know where this is at. Thanks, John. Thus far, we've secured acquisition of the additional land required. What we need the board to do is approve the closing of the railroad crossing and the road and remove the necessary easements. I would like to point out that we looked at numerous alternatives over the past 2 years in our conversations with BNSF. Many were cost prohibitive, and some were not even allowable by BNSF, but all of the feasible alternatives required the road closure. Are there any other questions about this photo before I move on, or what we're actually talking about here? Okay. Unit train capability allows us to be competitive with others in the ethanol industry. We currently have an excellent location with railroad access to all parts of the country. Unfortunately, we are denied access to Los Angeles and New York City because they will only accept unit trains. We have very limited access to Houston, as that market is dominated primarily by unit trains. These are three of the four largest ethanol markets in the country. Also, Houston and New York are key ports for exporting, which is becoming more and more important for ethanol. Without unit trains, we cannot access over 20% of the ethanol markets. Our industry has seen some turbulent times over the past 3 years, and we at E-Energy survived numerous challenges during that period. Now we need to take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves if we want to remain competitive. This project is one of those opportunities. Unfortunately, it comes at a cost of inconvenience to a few of our neighbors due to the road closure, but it's primarily because of our existence that this is an inconvenience. I'd like to explain that. Most of the traffic coming down 134th Road is on its way to our plant, either to deliver corn or load out distillers' grains. Some of these people will have to take an alternate route that could add 2 to 3 miles to their trip. Others might have to travel around a section to access their ground during planting and harvesting. We can appreciate that this extra distance can chew up precious time during busy seasons, but the price benefits they receive from E-Energy more than makes up for this. To illustrate this point, we use approximately 21 million bushels of corn per year at our facility, and about half of that, or 10 million bushels, comes directly from Gage County farmers. The direct benefit to these farmers by E-Energy being here is about 20 cents per bushel. That means that about $2 million of additional profitability is passed on to Gage County farmers each year. Other benefits to the county come in the form of jobs. We have 41 full-time employees with an annual payroll, including benefits, of $3 million. It's estimated that we create an additional secondary jobs of 102. And finally, there are property taxes. Between real estate and personal property taxes, we paid in excess of $1 million in 2010. In anticipation of questions or concerns that might come up concerning accessibility by rescue vehicles, we have spoken with the heads of both the Adams Fire Department as well as the Adams Rescue Squad. Both agree that the closure of this 134th Road will not be an issue. There's only one potentially impacted party located at the half-mile mark of the road in question. They estimate that closing the road would add about 3 minutes onto the time needed to get to that party via an alternate route. But they also pointed out that currently, if we've had wet weather, they already take the alternate route because of the condition of the 134th road. Another possible question that might be raised, since we realize that the closure of the railroad and road is essentially permanent, is whether E-Energy Adams will be around for the long haul. We hear this question more often when corn prices are very high like they are right now. The simple answer is that our profit margins are not dependent on corn costs only, but on ethanol prices and distillers' prices as well. In fact, despite record high corn prices, margins are positive for us even today. Our location and marketing contributes to favorable distillers' prices. Ethanol prices are generally supported by energy prices, like crude oil, but are also dependent on logistics. Unit train capability will improve our logistics and make us more efficient. As long as we continue to be one of the more efficient ethanol plants in the U.S., the market will incentivize us through profitability. One other point I wanted to mention, we realize that there will be an increase in traffic on 120th Road due to the 134th Road closure, and because of that, we have offered to pay the township a one-time contribution of $10,000 to help offset the cost associated with increased maintenance on that 120th Road. In summary, we need this project to go forward in order to remain competitive within our industry. This project is good for us, and it's good for the community. And I would ask the board to join BNSF and E-Energy in support of this road and railroad crossing closure. I want to thank the board for this opportunity to speak this morning, and I would entertain any questions that you might have at this time.
I have a couple. I'm not against the project. I have a couple of concerns that need addressed.
Okay.
I went and looked at it. Number one is the $30,000 the county spent in the easement acquisition for the road that we are now going to close, vacate. Number two is the bridge to the north. In our lifetime, that bridge is not going to fail. Maybe in our children's lifetime, that bridge will fail. What happens to that 400 acres in between the railroad tracks and the bridge? Do we landlock somebody? Those are the concerns. When you look at the statute states for public interest. Are we looking at public interest when these are issues in my mind that need addressed before the final vote? When talking about hurrying the issue through, I'm very reluctant to hurry it. There's a time and place to address these concerns. I believe all these concerns need addressed before we jump through all the hoops.
I agree with you. We don't wish to hurry this. The only reason we were asking the board to consider possibly voting today was because we have a lot of suppliers waiting in the ranks here, and we know that the prices are changing. Some of these are changing daily for rail ties.
Steel, definitely.
Steel. And so that was the reason we wanted to move forward and gain 2 weeks on this thing if we could. But the thing that we can't have is a vote of no. So therefore, we want to make sure everybody's comfortable with this before they vote, whatever that takes.
Right.
Okay. As far as the bridge, you know, it's a long time off, and who can say whether it will ever fail in this century? We aren't landlocking anybody right now, and that's really for the foreseeable future, and I think that's all we can say. Back to your other point about what's good for the community or the public, I think what we need to consider is the greater good on this, and I've tried to point that out in some of the things here. The money we ingest or inject into the community, into the county, by our being there is very, very beneficial to this community.
I'm not going to disagree with
yeah.
you. I'm just saying,
and
these are arguments that we need to address.
Okay, understood. And we need to be competitive in order to stay running. We're profitable now. We intend to remain profitable. But these are the kinds of opportunities that can really mean something to us as a company. So that's why we think that it's worth it for the greater good.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Dennis.
Question, obviously, as the, you know, these attorneys are. As you make the markets available, in, like in New York and L.A. and what have you, so that increases the need for capacity as far as your plant is concerned. Do you have that capacity? Are you able to do that capacity right now? What will it do as far as jobs are concerned by creating those markets and the desire for additional goods that you're selling? What does it do as far as jobs?
It's a good question. Actually, it guarantees our running by increasing the demand for our products. Okay, so increasing the demand means we have more choices to get a better profit margin in these different areas. We have plans, if we wish to double the capacity of our plant. We've built our plant for doubling the capacity. We don't have any near-term plans of doing that, but everything is laid out for that possibility. So at this time, we don't plan on adding any more jobs because of this. It just makes us more secure, if you will. I want to go back. I think you had a question about this $30,000. I want to make sure I understand that. What's the $30,000 that you were?
Well, Roger, on the easements, the acquisition of that road, is that what we got figures here of?
Marlin had indicated in his research on this at the time we acquired an easement. I believe he said it costs around $30,000.
Okay. Let me just talk to that. When this road was built, this hard surface road by the county, that was during our construction, we contributed $1 million towards the building of that road. Part of those monies, I believe, was used to acquire this $30,000 easement. So, I mean, we've already contributed to that.
Okay,
that's
a question that needs asked.
Mr. Adams, the area you paid for is the blue area. And while there is a separate question for a vacation of part of that easement that you acquired in the blue, the topic of this morning's hearing is essentially the yellow area. So the $30,000, your question, does not relate to the rail
road closure,
the road closure or the crossing closure. Your money was paid over here in the blue.
But you'll be running tracks on that parcel, though.
Part of that blue, it's not the entirety. I overcolored it. Part of that, we are asking the county to release its easement in, but nonetheless maintaining all of the easement that you need for purposes of the road.
You may know, is that easement or did we purchase that?
It's an easement that you
clearly easement
purchased. So you would be, to the extent the county goes forward with that, you would be vacating part of that easement. So the area that is in yellow is actually owned by E-Energy, so you actually, where the road closure is, E-Energy owns the underlying fee for that property, so obviously it just reverts back to E-Energy. Thank you.
Yes.
With the ability of being able to color the map that way, is there any way I could find employment for my granddaughter?
She would do better than I do.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thanks.
Mark Weber. Name and address for the record, please.
Mark Weber, 17120 Gage Road, Adams. I'm a local farmer. I live north and east of the ethanol plant, about 4 or 5 miles. In addition to a farmer that sells corn to the ethanol plant, I also am an investor in the ethanol plant and was on the original board that put the ethanol plant together and built and started the ethanol plant. I would like to speak in favor of this project, and I've got just three quick points. One, at the time that we put the project together, there was financial incentive from the railroads to be able to deliver unit cars then. And we looked long and hard at putting in unit train capability at that time. Because of the railroad distance requirements and the problem with going further south, we deemed it impractical and too expensive to pursue that option. It is my understanding from the ethanol people that currently the railroad has relieved some of those restrictions, shortened that distance up, and made it far more practical for them to put in unit train capability. I have no doubt that had those requirements been in place at that originally, that we probably would have done unit train from the very beginning and we wouldn't be here today. Second point is that closing the road will be inconvenient to a number of farmers like myself who bring in corn from the north. It will be certainly a lot more inconvenient for those people that live there locally and farm there. For those of us that come in from a distance, it really just requires that we go a couple miles further out of the way. The fact of the matter is we're really spoiled because the ethanol plant's in our backyard, and for some of us, it's going to make a 4-mile round trip, 6-mile round trip. So is that inconvenient? Yes. In the big picture, we're just really, really lucky to have it there. Furthermore, for those of you who don't live in the area, that was a dirt road. And so it was an access road when the weather was nice, but if it was muddy or if there was snow drifts, that wasn't a passable road anyway. My third point is there are hundreds of small investors like myself who invested in that ethanol plant, hundreds of farmers in the surrounding area, 4, 5, 6, 7 counties that sell corn to the ethanol plant. I think from our standpoint, most important thing is financial viability long-term of the ethanol plant. We are seeing another rise up in corn. We had a record corn price yesterday. The last time that we had a run up in corn like this, it bankrupted a number of ethanol plants, shut all new construction down in the ethanol industry. What we need to do is to allow this plant to be as profitable as possible, and I think going forward, unit train capability is very important to that.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, any more? Want to speak for or against the vacation of the South 134th Road?
Hi, I'm Russell Klein, live at 947 Main Street, Adams, Nebraska. I have a farm on the east side adjacent to the eastern portion of the proposed railroad track. And actually, Mr. Adams, you addressed a couple of notes that I have here. And one being Resolution 105, directing the county highway superintendent to make a report on the possible road vacate, stating, whereas the public interest may require vacating the county road. I'm public. Many of my neighbors are public, but I think we're talking about a corporation that wants this done to increase their profits, which I can understand that. The other is the bridge question, and unless we have assurances from the county or somebody that we are not going to be landlocked to farm, you know, some pretty good farm ground, I just wouldn't feel that you, the supervisors, would be acting in the public's best interest to vote to approve the vacate of the road. And as far as, will the bridge last? The way the weather conditions are, you've seen some wild weather all around the world. I could see where that approach could wash out in a year. Who's going to say?
Yeah, no one knows.
No one knows. So I wouldn't say it's going to last a century or what. And this is something that is a major concern to me because I know the railroad will not cooperate with any landowner as far as letting them across unless you want to pony up $300,000-$400,000 for their high-priced labor. And I guess other than that, those are my two main concerns.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, Rusty, tell us about how much land you would have that would be landlocked.
Well, mine personally that's tillable wouldn't be probably 50 acres, maybe not even that much. But my neighbors, Gary, I think Ted's, there's Gary.
I guess I have a question. I was signed up to speak there, but is that on a different sheet then?
Yeah, it's probably on the other one.
You want to do them together, or are you on
a... Well, we'll do it separately, so you can come up, though. Name and address for the record, though.
Well, thank you for hearing my concerns.
You're welcome.
Gary Cruzy, 3042 South 148, Adams. A couple of concerns. Carl mentioned, Rusty said there, I think there's six different landlords that would be in that between the river and the railroad track. So that's a major concern. As Mark said, I own the house on the mile. I do own that house. That's my place. I have a lady and her son live there right now. I live a mile to the east on 148th on my father's place. So my land is there. It'll increase my hauling rate from 3 to 6 miles. That's the way life is sometimes. But I do have a concern for if it, ever the bridge would go out, that we'd have a access into them farms, either by way of, through the railroad or through the creek somehow.
We are working on the Barnston South Bridge right now. It's a federal aid project that started in 1986.
Yeah, no, it's not a fun thing, is it?
No. That's what I'm saying. It can take a long time.
Yes. So I think that's probably something that needs to be addressed. I'm sure we'd somehow get it done. Usually that's the way it goes. But if bridge would go out, that... If you guys...
I believe something can be worked out. I honestly do. But I believe these are concerns that need addressed. So there's no hindsight, no rash decisions were made. And then 6 months from now, somebody hurried it, address them now, and handle it appropriately as we go.
Understand. I appreciate your time. Any questions?
Thank you. Any others on the vacation of the South 134th Road? Please.
Deborah Thompson. I live at 3447 South 134th Road in Adams. I'm the one that it's going to affect the most. I have a son that has some health issues, and if something would happen, I'm concerned about getting emergency care there in a hurry because he's got pectus excavatum, which is his chest is caving in, so if he has an asthma attack, I need to have someone there very fast. Also, that snowstorm we had 2 years ago, I couldn't get north at all for about a month. The only way out was south. I couldn't go north at all because the maintainer had broke down, and then they couldn't get anybody in there to get it open, and then when they finally did, they had a hard time opening it because it had a couple snowstorms there already, so it was a hard time. I always go south, very seldom. The only time I go north is to work, and that is if the roads are good, if it's dry. If it's snowing or raining, I go south. Because the other day I went to work, I went north, they maintained the road, and there was something in the road, and it ruined my tire. Luckily, it didn't go out until I got to work. So I have to have another way out other than north in case of medical emergencies. I have to get to work. I work for Department of Roads in Lincoln, and I've got to have some way to get out of there. And if you have to shut that road, find me another way out to the south, because if I can't get north, I'm screwed, because that little bridge to the north by the grain bins, it's not a very big bridge, and it's not in that great a shape. So if that would go out, then what do I do? And where would I go? So.
Questions?
Do you own that property? Or
no, Gary Cruzy owns it. I ran it.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure we're talking about the same one.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else?
He might speak of the road track. Jim Bear, Rears Township.
Need a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to close the public hearing. Normal procedure is 2 weeks, you know, and that is what I feel we should follow. So it is 9:58. Need to motion to open a public hearing at 9:58 that was called for 9:45 for the closure of the railroad crossing on South 134th Road East Aspen in Adams Township.
So move to open a public hearing.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to open the public hearing. Sign-up sheet. Mr. Seitzman, you're up first. Oh, you were going to do it all the same time, weren't you? Mark Weber, are you done on yours?
I'm done.
Okay. Gary, you done? Andy Carruthers. I saw Andy somewhere. There he is.
Andrew K. Carruthers, 2205 North 6th Street, Suite 10A, Beatrice, Nebraska. Chairman Adams, members of the Board of Supervisors, I represent the Village of Adams and also Adams Township. I have been I've been asked to come in and speak to the County Board on behalf of E-Energy Adams. I'm in a neutral position, but I want to indicate that, first of all, E-Energy has come to the Village of Adams regarding this project. The acquisition of the additional ground and the road issues don't impact the Village of Adams, but obviously if this goes through, we're going to have to rezone those two additional tracks from agricultural to industrial. And so E-Energy Adams has approached the Village of Adams. The Village of Adams basically told E-Energy, if you can get this done, you won't have any problem with us moving forward to rezone it from agricultural to industrial. And we'll probably annex the additional two parcels at the same time. So Village of Adams has always been supportive of the ethanol project. It's an economic opportunity, economic development opportunity for not only the Village of Adams but the County of Gage. So, and it's been a beneficial partnership for the Village of Adams. With respect to Adams Township, I have sent a copy of a resolution that I think you probably have that the Adams Township passed on March 29th. They held a public meeting at the Adams Community Center regarding the road closure. As you're familiar with, Section 39-1726 basically says that in a county that's organized on a township basis, if you're going to vacate and abandon a road, you have to provide notice to the township, and they have the option to take that road over, take over and maintain the road. Also, with respect to the rail crossing, the township really doesn't have a say in that. I mean, that's with the County Board of Supervisors as to whether that rail crossing is eliminated. Adams Township came to me, asked for an opinion as to liability and other issues with respect to if the County Board does vacate and abandon that road and eliminate the rail crossing. I basically issued an opinion to them that if they eliminate the rail crossing, there is basically no benefit for Adams Township to take over that road. Okay. There's no benefit because the road won't be used, and obviously there's some liability concerns that, you know, someone in low light conditions or in bad weather could turn off onto that road and if they're not paying attention, drive right into the side of a rail car. So with respect to that, if the County Board does decide that it's going to eliminate the rail crossing and abandon and vacate that short stretch of South 134th Road, it's the township's position that they will not take over that short portion. And that's reflected in the resolution that they passed on March 29th. So with that, if any questions?
Mr. Adams, I would suggest we receive and place on record I have a certified copy which Mr. Crothers sent to me regarding that resolution. It's a matter of
forever. Public hearing.
What's that?
Vote on that after
well,
we come out of public
yeah, you
hearing.
Can do that. I just want to make sure we got that on file.
Okay. Any other questions for Andy?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Thompson, did you get yours the first time? Okay. Is there anyone else speaking for or against the railroad closure? Need a motion to come out of public hearing?
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion. Vote. 6-0. Need a motion to place on in the file resolution 2011-1 from Adams Township.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. And that'll be on in 2 weeks also. So let's take a 10-minute recess, and then we will go into an executive closed session that's scheduled for 10 o'clock. We'll do that at 10:15.
Hey, Jerry.
Okay.
Okay, it's 10:15. We're going to reconvene the Gage County Board of Supervisors.
Okay. Thanks, Benny.
Attendance by observation. Juergens. Bauman. Adams. Byers. Setzer. Dorn is temporarily out of the room. Lytle is gone. 10 o'clock closed session update on CIR. Matt?
I would move to go to closed session for the purpose of discussing pending litigation strategy with our attorney for the protection of the public interest.
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 5-0 with Dorn temporarily at 5-0. 5-1-1, Dorn temporarily absent. There are Dorns back in the room, so. Okay, closed session then. I need a motion to come out of executive session.
So moved. So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion. Vote. Myron.
Oop, we got bumped.
6-0. Jerry.
I believe on your agenda, the next item you had was approve or disapprove a response to a discrimination charge filed by Mr. Marlon Cleaver, and who's employed by the county. Our office has prepared a response with the assistance of the county board members that were directly involved or named in the charge, and have presented that to some of the county board members that have been involved for a review. And I believe that what you have now in front of you is a final draft of that, and my understanding is that that has met the approval of those county board supervisors that reviewed it. So I would ask that the county board approve the response and authorize the county board chairman to sign on behalf of the county.
So I guess I'd make a motion to approve the response to NEOC on Marlon Cleaver's charge against Gage County and authorizing Rex to sign that.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
Thank you. We will file that with the Nebraska Equal Opportunity Commission, and it will then be made public in the clerk's office. And if anyone has any questions on the response, I welcome them contacting me, and I'd be more than happy to try to explain the county's position. Thank you.
Thank you. Marlon, Highway Superintendent report.
Thanks, Jerry.
We like to look at you. We can keep you around.
All right. Starting on the top of my report, we're not having a zoning meeting this month. There's no request for any special uses or anything. And being springtime, planting time, we're just not having a meeting. So, moving through the business, in your packet, there's a flyer from MIPS on the highway software. Brought this up at Road and Bridge. I did confirm a price with them. You can see it on their report there. This system would be the one we have now is a DOS program that's pretty hard to work with and no support for it anymore. I'm just bringing it to your attention. I think through finance and Road and Bridge we'll be talking about it a little more. Then on the budget, I was after this week's claims are paid, I think we'll be at 80.77% of the year and the budget used so far then, and that's, keep in mind, after this week is 81.64. Next thing is rock and gravel and rock update. The low bid for the gravel for townships was Ace, and right now he's moving his location, so there's no gravel for him to haul. We're starting to haul low gravel on the county roads where needed, getting the worst ones first. And then I included an SOP for backing come up after the rollover in one of the storms. Yeah, it's in your report there. Basically, the Road and Bridge Committee looked at that. We'll be having a safety meeting and getting it all out to all the guys so they can attach it to their personnel or their policy. So. Then on the East 27 Island Grove Bridge, that's the one that, where accident damage happened. There's a contractor that's he's got the price of $7,500 and this is going to be paid by insurance off the owner of the vehicle, and contractor's schedule said 2 to 4 weeks before he can get to it. So then on the federal aid bridges, we negotiated with a construction engineer, and we're at the stage where the NDR is going to write the contract with the CEE, and that'll be coming in for approval by the board then. The other ones, the NY Moore and the Philly North, progressing on the NEPA yet on them. There's supposed to be done with that by the end of April, which is with the NY Moore one where the property's all been purchased. That should get on the bid list then by late summer, sometime in there. So, as far as the crews, we got done with the Philly barn. We had the bridge crew go to crane school a couple days. There's two guys that will operate the cranes, and then Galen went also because he gets involved with that too. So, asphalt crew, they cut a lot of brushes. We did get a crack sealer back. Now they're sealing cracks. And the dirt crew was doing more riprap and stuff like that. So any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Yeah.
Stason, you're up.
I think Mark has a handout he's going to pass around. My name is Stacy Gross with Geocom. Our company does public safety communications consulting, GIS, as well as software. Mark talked a little bit ago about the reverse 911 system. That's basically a system that we implemented for the city and the county last fall, I believe. It's kind of part of a larger system that the sheriff's vehicles, the city vehicles, all have GPS tracking on them. They are seen at the comm center as well as on a web-based system that all the agencies access. I think the server for that system's at the police department. You guys should have, kind of if you roll through that, Mark wanted me to talk to you guys about our background or how long we've been doing business with you guys. I think the first date on that first section, 1997, back when you guys were looking at E911 countywide, we actually did a feasibility study, outlined the costs, the ramifications, what needed to take place. We then proceeded to do that project with the rural addressing, the mapping, basically adding the county to, I think at the time Beatrice had 911, but the county didn't, so we added the county to the Beatrice system. And you can see there's various states going through. Those of you that are aware that the state of Nebraska, when they implemented back in 2001 or 2, the wireless statutes where everybody pays, I think it's 50 cents on the wireless phones and you pay $1 on your landline phones, that funding has allowed us to basically, for the last 5 years, maintain the GIS data that works in the system at the Beatrice PD, that they actually map 911 calls with, that the vehicles display on, and that's the same system that's used to do the reverse notifications. The state has been funding a contract with that actually expires in April. The state is now sending you funds. Beginning in July of last year, the state began sending wireless funds out to the counties. Now the counties are expected to fund those contracts for GIS data development for public safety, map software for public safety. So there's some discussion. Mark and I, we're going to go meet with the city after this. The city is actually the receiver of the wireless funds from the state because they operate the comm center, but those funds have to be mingled and matched with landline funds that the county collects. So there's going to need to be some kind of arrangement between the city and the county to figure that out going forward. As I said, in the past, since 2001, the state has just written, basically you guys have contracted with us, but the state's paid those contracts out of the wireless funds. Now they're sending those funds, they expect you to pick up those. So I don't know, Mark, if you have any comment on any discussions with the city of how that'll be shared, how that'll be.
Yeah, we started several months ago, and then it just kind of dropped again, so we got to deal with the, I'll be visiting with Roger's office and maybe Tobias, the city attorney, maybe get something drawn up what we're going to do. So after we meet with the chief today, we'll maybe go a little further with that. So it's pretty, it's kind of a mixed match what we do right now. I pay some of the bills, and we get a phone bill, and the city has to pay part of that phone bill. I pay part of that phone bill. And then the billing that we pay Geocom services goes directly to them. So there's just a whole bunch of different things that we just need to get straightened out. One way or another, we got to get it straightened out. Either they get all the money, we take less out of our contract, because we pay them money through contract, so that's all going to be listed in that contract, and it's never been listed in there before. There's some inventory that we utilize, we are supposed to take care of, that we do, that we get funding for, so it's just we need to get it cleaned up.
And there is, as you guys step through this handout, that there's about, after those first couple pages with all the years, there's basically the scope of services that we've been providing for the last 5 years that we're proposing for the next 5 years, which mainly deals with the GIS data for 911 as well as the 911 database that's maintained by Windstream. And basically time working with Mark on address updates, map updates, things happening in the county. And then the rest of this stuff is kind of fluff for you guys to look at later on. Shows our staff matrix. Talks about how everything we do is public safety oriented, Microsoft certified partner, ESRI business partner, which is the big name in GIS. I think there's a, and then there's some customer reference stuff at the back there. We basically, in Nebraska, in terms of public safety, GIS, and then the map software that's used at the comm centers, I'll just kind of, we basically have about 85% of the state utilizes our software and services. So basically everything that's colored on this state map are our customers. So quite a few. With that, I'll entertain any questions.
Sure. Hold that map up again. I'm just looking here, Mark. With our, how does this affect where we sit and we have some of our neighbors that aren't members of GIS. How do we communicate with them as need be?
Good question. In this scope of services in here, we the state was paying our contract, there's a, they call it a state GIS data repository that's operated by the Public Service Commission. Every month when we do updates to your files or to your neighbor's files, we upload that data to that data repository. I know that Roads pulls off of that, State Patrol pulls off that data, counties can pull off of that data if they want to. It's really, it's got an aerial photo, there's about 11 layers, aerial photo, road center line, fire district information. So that's basically how data is shared, is it's all in one place and then other counties pull it down. In the case of the notification system, Jefferson County has the same system. You guys actually back each other up. So on each of your systems, you have each other's map data, so you can see as things go. And it seems to me, Mark, we've got appended part of Lancaster. There's parts of other counties around you that are built onto your system in dispatch, so that they can see if something's going on just outside the county, they can see it. So
yeah, just looking at our association with our friends to the north and the east, there's
basically, there's two companies, us and a company called GIS Workshop, which I think does your assessor stuff, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Us two companies maintain the whole state. And they kind of came at it from doing the assessors, and now they're doing public safety, whereas all we do is public safety. So.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Sure.
Approve or disapprove change order number 42, lower level window replacement project north, for a decrease of $990 to the contract amount.
Make a motion to approve change order 42.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byron. Discussion. Go ahead.
Do we have to pay the percentage on this change order since it's a decrease, or do they pay us back?
I don't know if we do anything with reductions. Typically, I think the dollars just come back. But does everyone know where this is? This is talking about?
No.
This had to do with some work here on the north side where they had done these windows down here. There were some, what word am I looking for?
Drain tile?
It's that concrete, I guess I'll call it. There was some stuff there that they decided to not replace and not put back in because of what we're going to do with the landscaping, the grading, potential concrete work, and then the north side, the staircase there. So that's where some of that came from, I believe, is where that came from.
If it's a reduction, I'm for it.
I know, that's a change order. The whole room got real doom and gloom.
Yeah.
He said we're going to call them contract modifications.
Yeah.
Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0. Approve or disapprove resolution to transfer $100,083 from the general fund to the road and bridge sinking fund for operation of the fund, resolution number 11-18.
So moved.
Moved
to
by
approve,
Bauman.
To approve.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Matt.
Madam Clerk.
Because
why
that's
83
the way we
cents?
Had to balance it. It just comes out that way because you have to equal your revenue and your expenditure side. So 83 cents was what made it from what was sitting in there before. I couldn't go even. Sorry.
Okay. Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0. Committee reports. Terry.
I basically don't have a whole lot. Marlin's probably went through everything we discussed. Just the normal operations. Bridges we discussed about the lowering the tonnage on the bridges, and they were working on that to get some of those checked out and clarified. Other than that, everything that you see here is just kind of going over some certain things we've done. So not a whole lot else.
Okay. Any other committees? I think building and grounds is pretty well touched on this morning. So, Matt.
There was an issue regarding the punch list and how we need to get that last payment to for Cheevers, and regarding some damage to some personal property and countertop in the clerk's office. And the way that that was left is there apparently had been some prior arrangement between the clerk's office, Davy Jones, and a representative from Cheevers, and then to basically have a cost reduction and allow Davy Jones to do some of the work because they were going to change where the cash register, they were going to recess that and do something different. And so I said, you know, if it's damaged, just take off X amount of dollars and, you know, we'll go forward. Well, then the countertop showed up to be replaced. It didn't match, and it was contrary to the initial arrangement that was made. And so between that, and I believe they're seeking resolution to regarding the picture frame and the typewriter and stuff. And so
I haven't heard anything on that.
The way we left it in committee was that Davey would work that with Berg, and we talked to Wim specifically and said that it was going to kind of be this triangle and of people communicating and talking, and that the bill would be held until Davy Jones gives us the thumbs up that it's okay to pay that. So there's a $58,000 bill, I think, hanging out there, but we want to make sure we get resolution. So that was one discussion that there had been an arrangement that was made, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it was different.
You're going to find interesting. Terry, I want to touch on something in the Road and Bridge report. The greater miles, I had Don's office send a survey out to our comparable counties. We did not receive a lot of them back, but Gage County greater routes are per maintainer. We do 38 to roughly 50 miles per maintainer for our county operators. Saunders County does 55 to 70 miles per man, all gravel miles. Saline does 60 to 80 miles per man, only has 6.5 miles of asphalt. York does 83 to 100 miles, all gravel. So when we look at our greater routes, which I do believe that was supposed to be completed by now, that's something we need to take into consideration. That's all I want to touch on that. Any other committee report?
Finance committee, we talked briefly about as we start working on this next budget. So I'll work with the clerk's office and try to get out our packet of information request for proposed budgets. Those will start to go out, and some of those will trickle in. I was very, very glad to hear that Region 5 systems and services will be a reduction. Did the math. It's not much, but it is a reduction. And they do provide a good service. I, you know, just anecdotally say that you know, we'll start to work on that. And, yes, Dawn, I will hound you ad nauseum to get the thing done way ahead of time. I called her the other day, and she was already working on stuff. So
putting lines in and taking lines out.
So that'll start coming. Planning for that will start coming up, and I'm sure we'll see Gus's wish list. So
I need to know who's going. Yeah. We need to.
Oh, Dawn wants the Board of Equalization Committee to think about the Thursday, May 26th class,
or anybody else,
on the workshop taking place at Kearney.
Workshop. Does anybody know whether they're going
workshop.
Or not going?
Board meeting that morning also in Lincoln.
In Lincoln, so you want me going? Okay.
I may.
Okay.
There's just so many. I mean, there really is.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Recognition dinner Friday night. Gus is probably emceeing it sounds like.
What time?
Yeah.
Time
is
it? He's the entertainment, yeah. So here's how we cuff and stuff.
But all new members have to wear
tuxedos. 6:30.
You're right.
What time? No, it's costume.
No,
it's costume.
No, it's
well,
not.
Last time somebody told me I come an hour late.
I don't know.
If Terry and I wear a suit, that's a costume.